But I do want to go back now to the wartime years. You enlisted first in the army, and then there was a 16-mile route march that changed your mind.
Yeah, before breakfast we did 16 miles. That made me keen on the Air Force.
Tell us what took place in those early years of the war.
Well, one thing that happened to me that was that I was kicked while I was swimming at Brighton one day, and it ruptured my eardrum. And when I enlisted in the Air Force, I had to wait until that eardrum was repaired because I was aircrew.
Yes.
And then got into the Air Force. I really didn't do anything very brave and bold, but I did. I was in the forces right through the war.
Yes.
I was very fortunate that, you know, the way the war worked out.
Yes.
One of the things I wanted to do was to fly a Spitfire,
yes,
which I eventually achieved, my ambition. And I was a flying instructor for part
yes
of the war.
Wonderful.
That was a hectic time. I was teaching Fleet Air Arm fighter pilots to fly, and that was very interesting, but it was also rather hectic, because
you
had to do a lot during the war. You had to get on. It wasn't like training now, where people can take their time. You just had so much time to get people through.
Yes.
They had to get through, or they get washed out.
Yes. Jim Vickers-Willis, you trained 28 pilots in Canada, which I think is a fantastic thing. Just going back a notch, you said how excited you were during your own training at Victor Harbour in South Australia, and you had your elementary training at Essendon, and then went to Montreal.
Yes, that's right. We did our service flying training. You know, the most exciting moment was when, out of the trainees, one third were to become pilots, one third were to become observers, one third were air gunners, and we entered as air crew.
Yes.
We all wanted to be pilots. And when they made the announcements and I was announced as a pilot, I was never more excited about anything in my life.
Rang Mum and Dad.
Yeah, straight away I raced around to the long distance and rang them and told them I'm a pilot.
Wonderful. And as you have said, you flew Spitfires, Hurricanes and Mosquitoes. And in fact, at the time you were chosen to be an instructor, at that time 54 of the chaps in your group went off to fly in England, and just six were pulled off, you amongst them, to be instructors.
Yes, and my own instructor, pilot officer Sleep, when he heard I'd been selected as an instructor, he said, "Not you," because he didn't think I was a good enough pilot for that.
Jim, tell us a little bit about your flying experiences. You did have some amazing things happen, and you've explained that a lot of accidents, of course, happened during the training.
Yes, a lot of a big percentage of the Air Force accidents were in training, and it's no wonder, because they were pushing people through. I mean, when you look back, and it sounds really rather incredible, when I first did my night flying at Essendon Aerodrome, there was a pilot called Roy Goon. He was a very famous pilot. He'd actually shot down a few Japanese planes before he became a flying instructor, and he took me for night flying at Essendon Aerodrome. We were supposed to do two circuits and landings of the aerodrome, and I did my first circuit, and I landed about 30 feet high and fell the rest. and when I got around, Roy Goon jumped up on the wing, and he said, "That'll do, Vickers." He didn't let me do a second round. He wasn't going to risk the plane anymore. And then when I got to Canada, and I still was pretty lousy at night flying, even though I was a flying instructor, but I had to teach night flying. And the first time I had to teach night flying, I said, "Gee, I'll get Machen." Machen was the best pupil I had. He was a very smooth Englishman. And so I said to Machen, "Look, I'm not much good at night flying. I'm going to take you up before it's dark." And I took him up, and I was in the back seat, he's in the front seat, and I said, "I'll let you take off and land, and you can keep doing it as it gets darker and darker, and I won't touch the controls unless you get into trouble." So he did that, and we went round and round the aerodrome. gradually got darker and darker until it was real dark, and Mason was still landing them successfully. I'm still following him. After he'd done that a few times, I said, "Righto, Mason, now I'm going to land a couple, and you follow me." And that, the funny part about it is we did that, and then I went into the squadron office and collected my next pupil and taught him to light fly. So things were a bit dicey in the war. You had to get on with it. That was the trouble.
Yes. And Jim Vickers-Willis with us on Radio East. And there was an amazing occurrence up at Cape York. You had to bring home some Spitfires. There were some 16 of them up at Labuan Island. Right. Tell the listeners about that.
As we flew home 16, the Spitfire squadron, and only 9 of us got to Australia safely. Fortunately, nobody was killed. One chap went down in the middle of the ocean, but he was picked up by a Catalina. And when I arrived at Cape York Peninsula, I went to land and put my wheels down. The Spitfires were getting a bit old by that stage, and the wheels wouldn't go down. We had an oxygen bottle that we could fire, and that forced the wheels down, and I fired my oxygen bottle. The trouble was, once you'd fired it, the wheels couldn't come up again, and the wheels blocked the tropical air intake on the Spitfire. It had a special extra tropical air intake which stopped the engine from overheating in the tropics, and the wheels blocked that, and so the engine started to overheat straight away. So I came into land with my wheels down, and as I was about to land, they fired a red at me because there was an airliner coming in, so I had to go around again. The engine was starting to get a bit hot, so I came in again, and again they fired another red at me, another airliner. They did that 3 times, and I was getting really, really hot. I could see the needle getting up on my engine temperature. And so the next time that I came in, they let me in, and I landed. And when I throttled back, the plane wouldn't throttle back because it was too hot, and it kept on firing. And so the only way I could land was by switching off. And when I got onto the ground, I taxied it by switching it off. The ground crew were amazed when I came in with my bag. Brr, brr, then silent, brr, brr. So that's how I arrived back in Australia.
Oh, and was there a crash in England in a mosquito?
Yes, that was in Canada.
In the
east coast of Canada, yes. We were just heading for England, and I crashed in a mosquito. I got out of that all right.
Yes. Well, the figure, I just staggered that 1/3 of all casualties, Jim, were in training, just to say it again.
Yes, and that was because there was pressure put on to get people through for the war effort.
Yes, and I think the listeners would love to hear you say in your words how relieved you were at the end when the war end came. You hadn't had to kill anyone.
No, those Spitfires were such lethal things with all the cannons and things. You didn't have to do very much to kill a few people. Yes.